I arrived at the court of the Viscount in my best dress. Blue, cotton, hemmed. It wasn't much, but where I came from, it was the very best you could find. Finery, silk satin and lace, that all belonged to a different world. The world I was now being invited to. When the notice came, it was presented as a request. But when one is summoned to court, it's never really a request. I'd been told that my beauty had gained the attention of the Viscount, the wealthiest man in the kingdom. A messenger had summoned me, speaking of my great beauty and how it had captured the Viscount's attention and imagination. I was to be brought before him so he could assess my beauty firsthand and find a place in his palace, what the messenger called my proper place. He was not a man to say no to. It was every girl's dream to be summoned, not just to the court, but to a whole new world, a world I dreamed of all my life, to be transformed into one of the women I'd only admired from afar, dressed as royalty, worshipped, adored by all. And when the time came and I was presented to him, surrounded by the beauty and majesty of the court, I stood in my plain dress, looking the best that I could, hoping to please his watchful eye. As beautiful as the court was, its viciousness and politics were the stuff of legend. I knew I was ill-prepared, but having the attention of the Viscount, I thought, would be enough to protect me. He summoned me close and only said one thing. Please know that whatever happens, you will always survive. His eyes were kind, and his smile was warm. I curtsied as I'd been taught and lowered my head. I didn't understand his words at the time. I thought they were a kindness, a statement of his protection. I was escorted by two young women who said nothing to me, but only led me to a room. The room was the most magnificent place I had ever seen. Walls adorned with art, shelves of books, a dressing area with a gown and finery befitting a princess. There was a tea service laid out with cakes and clotted cream and jam and biscuits. The two women excused themselves from the room and shut the door behind them, and I lost myself in the opulence. Everything around me was new and beautiful, elegant, lavish. I soaked in every detail, feeling myself transported so far away from the humble cottage I was raised in. I was here. I was really here. And my life was forever changed. It felt like being inside a fairy tale, full of magic and wonder. I was awakened from my dreamlike trance as the doors opened again. This time, I saw two figures approach. They were clad entirely in black, shiny clothing, which fit like a second skin. It appeared to be painted on them, covering every inch of their bodies, except for their eyes. One of the figures had eyes of the deepest blue, the other brown, flecked with bits of gold, which made them sparkle. They said nothing. I wasn't even sure if they would be able. Their faces, including their mouths, were encased in the shiny black coating, unlike anything I'd ever seen. They approached and began undressing me, removing my blue cotton dress and my underclothes. Silently, their movements were graceful and effortless, hands moving over me, slowly revealing my body until I stood naked. There was no shame or embarrassment. I was surrounded by beauty, and I had never felt more beautiful in my entire life. Slowly and deliberately, they began to dress me, moving my body, gently positioning my arms and legs as each garment was put in place, clothing and adornments I'd never seen or only seen from afar. Such effort and such detail. As I looked down, I felt myself being transformed, improved, made into something delicate and fragile and refined. It must have taken hours. There was no clock. I could tell it was going to take some getting used to. The corset was laced so tightly. Initially, I felt it wrap around me and compress, but on occasion, it would be drawn tighter as my body adjusted to it. No words, just a gentle pressure on the laces, which translated to the corset growing tighter and more secure. It felt a bit disconcerting, but also like I was being brought into a new world. For years, I had seen the women of the court and looked upon them with a mixture of curiosity and wonder and envy, and now I was becoming one of them. It felt intense and unnatural, but also like the fulfillment of my deepest dream. When the corset was tightened for the last time, I could feel each and every breath. I could move, but with great effort. It imposed some severe limitations, but also created a certain grace. The heels on my feet made my balance precarious. I'd been taught to walk in heels, but never ones like these. They were twice the height and were at an angle that strained my feet. And they were tight, perhaps a size too small. I asked if there might be something more comfortable, but my question was neither answered nor acknowledged. Walking was a challenge, as was any movement at all. I was confined, trapped, but also so very beautiful. I felt myself becoming what I had dreamed about, a princess, someone to be admired, a true lady of the court. I sat on the stool provided. There were chairs as well, but dressed as I was, I couldn't imagine sitting in one. I felt like a doll, a feeling compounded as my hair was brushed and arranged, and my face made up with powder and blush and lipstick and mascara, and more I felt like a painted doll. And for the first time in my life, I felt truly beautiful. The figures retreated from the room as silently as they had entered. The tea service was in reach, and I was hungry and thirsty, and I poured myself a cup of tea and took a small cake. Every movement was an effort. Every movement was an effort. And even raising the cup to my lips, made me aware of everything I was wearing and how it constrained me. I took in everything around me, the art, the books, the china and tea service. I felt like another decoration in the room, but like I belonged here, like I was part of it. Each breath made shallow by the corset, and when I stood, each step placed delicately and carefully. What would have normally taken a few seconds to do now took minutes. Each step made me reflect on my corset, my shoes, the movement of my gown, how each piece underneath it would move and rustle with even the slightest motion. I walked to the bookshelf and withdrew a copy of Alice in Wonderland, flipping carefully through its pages, admiring the gold leaf and hand-painted illustrations. I gently closed it and slipped it back in place, smiling. A book like that likely cost more than my family earned in a year. I toured the room, taking in every detail. Each step was a challenge, making me so aware of what I was, what I had become. My feet started to ache, but I didn't care. I felt elegant, alive, beautiful. The pain seemed a small price to pay to feel this beautiful. After a time, I felt my stomach a bit full, and the pressure of the corset seemed to compound the sensation. I had to relieve myself. I looked around the room, hoping to find somewhere to do so, a toilet. Then it dawned on me that even if I did, it would be difficult to remove my clothing by myself. I walked to the door and turned the handle, but it was locked. I knocked. The heavy wood barely registered my knuckles tapping against it. So I pounded with my fists. It was louder, but not by much. I called out, feeling a bit of desperation. No response. The desperation was turning into pain. My bladder was straining. I hadn't drunk much of the tea, but I was feeling impossibly full. I stiffened as I felt a small trickle escape from between my legs. I squeezed myself tight to try to prevent any more from escaping. I gasped. I thought not just of my discomfort, but also of my gown, my petticoats, my undergarments, layers upon layers of beautiful silk, satin, cotton, and taffeta. How beautiful it all was, and how beautiful it made me look. I hadn't grown up in this world, but the dress and everything that went with it made me feel like I belonged. I hit the door harder, calling out now as loud as I could. I pressed my ear to the door, hoping for a response. There was only silence. I walked back to the stool and found myself sobbing. Each step made the sensation worse, the urgency. I reached down and fumbled with my garments. The heavy corset made bending almost impossible, leaving me to feel my way through it. I found buttons and hooks and clasps, and I did my best to undo them, but nothing seemed to have an effect. The waistband around the pantaloons which covered my crotch and legs, had a very heavy thread running through it. I couldn't find any buttons, no clasps. And then I realized I had been sewn into them. I found the stitching and slipped my finger underneath the heavy thread and tugged at it. But it seemed impossible to break. And when I withdrew my hand, I could see lines on my fingers where the thread had cut in. Pain at first, followed by small droplets of blood. I reached down and tugged and pulled at the fabric, tearing my beautiful new garments. I couldn't see how open it was, but I could feel the air on me then, between my legs. I tried my best to hold back, but I couldn't stop myself. I felt my beautiful undergarments soaked as I released the stream of urine. Some of it streamed down and hit the floor, but most of it got caught in the tattered fabric of my torn pantaloons and petticoats, seeping into them, making them stick to my legs. I could feel the wetness slowly spreading into the fabric. A hot pee streamed from my pussy. I couldn't help it, defiling my beautiful clothing, soaking it. The warmth coating my pussy and leaking down to my thighs, ruining everything. I looked down at the floor, at the mess I had made. There was nothing to clean it with. It sat there, a puddle on the floor, a puddle I had made, a reminder. I moved the stool a few feet away and tried to avoid looking at it, but I could smell it. I reached down, trying to remove my wet clothing, but I couldn't even manage to lower the top petticoat. It had no laces or buttons, just more thread, the thread that had torn my fingers, the thread that sewed it shut. I reached behind my back, looking for laces to the gown, but found them covered by what felt like a leather panel, also sewn shut. I twisted my arms behind me to find the laces of the corset, to loosen it just a bit, but they too were out of reach. I stretched my legs out, my legs open to dry them. I could see my shoes too were going to be impossible to remove. At the top, they were adorned with tiny locks. Everything I was wearing was beginning to feel oppressive, like a prison. And the wetness between my legs, pressing against me, was growing cold now. Everything sticking to me. So uncomfortable, so mortifying. I was so terrified of being seen now. Before, I had wished for the door to be opened, but now I dreaded it. And finally, I waited. And when the door finally opened again, I desperately tried to explain. There were women I saw now, dressed as before in their strange and shiny black bodysuits, removed the tea service and replaced it with a small tray of what appeared to be cucumber sandwiches and a large goblet of wine. I pleaded with them to let me use the toilet. But once again, nothing I said was even acknowledged. I asked for fresh garments, to be changed, like a child who had wet themselves. But they continued as if they were robots. Before leaving, one of the women walked to the bookshelf and removed the copy of Alice in Wonderland. Just that one book. And then they both exited. As the door shut, I heard the sound of it locking. I sat still, trying to process what was happening. My hunger grew, and I indulged in the sandwiches that had been left for me. They were the most delicious thing I had ever tasted. But they left a strange taste on my tongue. Not unpleasant, but unusual. Sweet. I finished them all and sipped the wine. The sandwiches seemed to sit in my stomach like a weight, feeling heavy and uncomfortable. I began to worry. Was this some kind of strange game? Was I being poisoned? Was this going to be the end of me here in this room? I felt nauseated then, and then the feeling would pass, and the rumbles would begin in my stomach and return again. I could feel my underwear drying out a bit, but the fabric still stuck to me, to my pussy, and to my legs. I took comfort in the fact that my gown was still intact. But I no longer felt beautiful. How could I, knowing I had soiled myself? My corset, the shoes, were growing painful now. The discomfort was turning into a biting sensation. I found that sitting up very straight relieved some of the pressure, but only slightly. I tried to adjust myself inside, but nothing would move. So I sat, and I waited, wondering what would come next. I suspected it was nighttime by now, but sleep seemed impossible, dressed as I was. Somehow, sleep found me. I don't recall how or when. Perhaps it was the wine that overtook me, or perhaps it was just the mental exhaustion of the day. But when I woke, my head was filled with a dull pain, and my body ached all over, and my stomach felt worse. It was a feeling that was hard to explain, a dull sickness, coupled with very intense hunger. I thought if I could just eat something, perhaps this would pass. My corset and shoes were still in place, and even more uncomfortable than the day before. I worried that my feet were blistered, and the corset had cut into my skin. It took me some effort to right myself. I stood and I looked at my gown. It was no longer as elegant or flowing. Parts of it seemed bent, contorted. The fabric wrinkled from where I had lay on it to sleep. It seemed ill-fitting now, and as I looked for my stool, I saw it was gone, as were the chairs. On the table was a bowl of what looked like gruel, and no utensils. I scanned the room and noticed it was all different now. The art had disappeared. The books were gone. It was bare. Empty walls. Empty shelves. As if it had been abandoned. Its beauty stripped away in the night. The room looked as if it was waiting to be filled and returned to life. I wondered how long I had slept. My hunger was starting to overtake me now, almost painful, and I sheepishly lifted the bowl of gruel to my lips. It was cold and slid slowly from the bowl into my mouth. It had no taste. What little taste it had was unpleasant. Like the sandwiches before, the same aftertaste. I could feel it on my lips and a bit on my cheeks and chin. I felt any sense of grace melting away. The last bit I scooped from the bowl with my fingers and licked them clean. I was still hungry, but the pain in my belly had passed. I drew the sleeve of my gown over my face, wiping my mouth clean, preferring to soil it, then remain covered in thick, pasty, cold porridge. Standing now was adding to the pain in my feet, and I desperately wished to remove my shoes. I started to think about how I could get out of the clothing. Some of it, any of it, the gown and the finery I'd loved so much, was beginning to feel like a prison. I'd been dressed for a full day now, and I could feel my perspiration underneath. The room was warm, more so than the day before. I wanted to sit, and I contemplated lying down to rest. And as I did, my stomach began to rumble. I felt it squirming, twisting. It was like the night before, but this was much more severe. I heard the noises coming from my belly, and I began to feel the cramps. I grimaced, and I let go a bit, and some gas escaped. The odor was foul. It filled the room, almost making me gag, and I felt a small bit of fluid escape. I felt it, hot and wet, pressing against me, trapped inside my underwear. I pressed my legs together, but the feeling only got worse. So much worse. And slowly, I felt myself losing control. My bowels released. I tried to stop it. I tried so desperately. And it left me crying and sobbing and helpless. I felt my beautiful and elegant underwear and petticoats flooded with hot, disgusting liquid. It was everywhere at once, and I could feel it running down my legs. Between my corset and the rest of my dressing, I couldn't even reach to wipe myself or clean myself. All I could do was feel it oozing out of me and onto me and coating me and sliding down my legs and covering my ass, and for the rest of the day, that was all there was. Me standing alone in my filth and crying. I had ruined everything that had made me beautiful, and I worried about how I would be received now. How could I be? Perhaps these were all tests, but if they were, I had failed them, all of them, badly. The sleeve of my gown had a bit of crusted gruel on it, and I picked it off. A vain attempt to regain a bit of the elegance that I had now lost. The room was hotter now, and it made me sweat more and more profusely. I felt my breast and underarms with a film of sweat. Eventually, I had no choice but to lower myself to my knees, and then they grew sore from the pressure against the floor. But I had made it to the ground, realizing I might not be able to stand up again. And then the door opened, and I began to beg, to plead. I asked to be free, unlocked. I told them I wanted to go home. I wanted my old life back. I wasn't at the court of the Viscount. This was something else entirely. A dream descending into darkness. A nightmare. Now, there was no tea and no sandwiches. Just a funnel forced to my mouth with something poured into it. It flooded my mouth. I swallowed. But more and more it came, and I drank and opened my throat just to try to avoid drowning. My stomach was soon cramping again, and I was moaning and crying, and then the room began to spin. When I woke, I was no longer dressed. I hadn't been cleaned either. I was naked, but I could feel myself still covered in my own waste. I felt a heavy iron collar around my neck and my right cheek pressed into the hard, cold concrete floor. The collar was secured to a bolt in the floor, and it was impossible to raise my head. My hands were shackled behind my back, and I could feel heavy steel cuffs on each ankle. It was a relief to kneel and raise my ass into the air. The room was cold, and I was naked and colder. It was a cell I was in, with a small window, 2 feet square, with iron bars. I could see if it was dark out or light, but little more. Every so often, I could hear the sound of faraway voices. I waited, unable to move. There was no food. No water. It was 2 days. When the cell door opened, I couldn't raise my head to see. I begged and pleaded, hearing myself grow increasingly desperate and incoherent. I was unlocked, and I struggled to kneel. And as I did, I felt the heel of a boot on my chest, pressing sharply, causing me to topple to the floor, arms still shackled behind me. A strong hand grabbed my hair and began dragging me across the hard stone floor. I could feel my knees scraping the ground, the pain growing more severe as I struggled. I tried to crawl and keep up, finding myself thrown down again next to a heavy iron apparatus. Two other men now took my arms and legs and lifted me up. I was so weak. It was impossible to resist. My ankles and wrists were locked into place, and my head put inside an iron yoke. A metal ring was placed in my mouth, roughly, stretching my jaw obscenely, making me scream, or at least try to. I could only move my head a few inches, the heavy collar trapping me in the yoke. I tried to relax my body, to find a comfortable position. I heard a soft clicking sound, and soon felt the sensation of a sharp spike against my belly. With each click, it forced me to raise my hips to avoid being impaled. I felt myself growing more exposed. As I raised my hips, the position my ankles were locked into forced me to splay myself open wide. Any effort to relax at all sent a sharp pain into the tender flesh of my belly. I was unable to raise my head enough to see above the waistline of the men now entering the room. I felt a splash of cold water on my pussy and ass, followed by the harsh sensation of a rough scrub brush. And it didn't stop. Bucket after bucket of cold water poured over my body and scrubbed harshly. It left my pussy and ass raw and tender and sensitive to any sensation. It felt as if my skin was being stripped away each time the harsh brush was pressed against me and dragged over my flesh. Before I could process the pain in my ass and pussy, a cock was being shoved through the iron ring in my mouth. It was large, hard, and throbbing. The man grabbed my hair and fucked my mouth and throat, ignoring my choking and gagging. As I felt him fuck my face, the brush scrubbed my ass more, cleaning me. More cold water, more scrubbing. I felt my tears flow down my face. The men were laughing and talking. It sounded like 8 or 10 had gathered now. I could make out bits and pieces of their conversations. Talk of the Viscount and his court, about his love of beauty and of his need to destroy it. Beauty, I learned, was for the court alone, and the Viscount could not abide anything or anyone of low birth possessing it. Who possessed it? It was the duty of his court to seek it out, and slowly and painfully destroy it. They took turns fucking my ass, my mouth, my pussy, coming inside me until all my holes were leaking. 3 times a day, they put me in the apparatus. 3 times a day, I was fed cum and told it was all I would survive on from now on. That and 1 large bowl of gruel served cold. I was cleaned only when I was being used. On rare occasions, the mysterious women would appear and brush my hair and check my body, applying medication where needed, if my cuffs or the apparatus had caused some injury. I was fed liquids through a funnel, unable to resist taking them in. Every effort I made to escape, or even end my life, was foiled. I tried to impale myself on the spike, but it seemed only capable of causing excruciating pain. Which would be treated then, and which healed, with no break in my routine. I learned to sleep, with my face mashed against the concrete, my hands shackled behind me. I could tell when I would have visitors with unusually large cocks by the size of the ring that was forced into my mouth. I had come to learn to recognize them by how they used me, by their scent, and by their voices. Within the first year, it must have been a year, I could recognize dozens, maybe 100. The one thing that kept me sane, that kept me human, was memories of that day in the most beautiful room I had ever seen, dressed and feeling like a princess. Memories of tea and cucumber sandwiches and Alice in Wonderland, of art and fine furniture that I had once lived among, even if only for a day. One day. One memory, but a feeling of such pure beauty, I refused to let go. This had become my world now. Concrete, iron, gruel, and cum, and the laughter of men, mixed with the groans and screams of their release. I don't recall how long it was when I heard talk of the Viscount's visit. I heard them say he had wondered if there was any beauty left in me at all, and whether he might be tempted to show mercy on me, take pity. I could only hope and imagine myself back in that room, in that beautiful dress, before everything was ruined. When the Viscount finally appeared one day, he leaned down towards me and looked deeply into my eyes. He was smiling, and he repeated the very words that he had used to introduce himself to me. "Please know that whatever happens," he laughed at me softly, "you will always survive." And that was the last time I ever thought about my day in that opulent room, dressed as a princess, sipping tea and eating cucumber sandwiches. And that was the last time I ever thought about that one day in that opulent room when I was dressed as a princess, sipping tea and eating cucumber sandwiches, of my gown, of art, of beautiful books telling stories of magic and wonder, of ever feeling beautiful again.